Good morning.
Good morning.
Just a beginning sidebar. I just want you guys to know how much I appreciate y'all. It's fun. It's fun for me to watch the growth. As I think back, I found out that's what you do when you turn 50. You become more reflective, right? So I'm new at it, right? I'm a week in on the other side of the rainbow. But as I have been reflective this week in a lot of regards, I have reflected on this congregation and the beauty it is for me to watch a lot of the growth that I see. May not be represented by numbers always, but questions, oftentimes the ability to allow me to stretch you, which I appreciate a lot. We need to get this side of the congregation to like get after it a little bit. A lot of empty pews over here, Harvey. And since you're in front, this is like your section, okay? Jason, appreciate your words this morning a lot. Hunter, appreciate your class that you've been given, the passion, the heart that you're teaching that class with. Joe, appreciate the phone call last Sunday. You weren't at church, but you called me last Sunday and told me happy birthday. I appreciate that. There's just a lot of things that I think if we take time a little bit to stop, slow down, and there's just a lot of life to appreciate, isn't there? And we need to probably do that more. Appreciate y'all being here this morning. I wasn't sure, honestly, how many people would be here this morning since the topic is anger. Because I thought some of y'all might be like, I think I'll go ahead and take a pass on that one. But as Jesus continues this Sermon on the Mount, what we have deemed this great message by Jesus, and so much of this message that we've discounted over a period of our lives because we can't imagine living that extreme of a life. So we went through the Beatitudes, and then we went through the whole message of Jesus didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. And I think, sorry, I'm fighting allergies too, or something. But we have to keep that, sorry. This may happen 17 more times, just so you know. According to my wife, she's been counting how many times I sneeze in a row. It's important that as we get to this section on anger, okay, the section that really, this whole next section of text that we're going through is a section that's uncomfortable. I mean highly uncomfortable. Because Jesus is going to take a lot of the commands, right, and he's going to put them on hyperdrive. And it's going to make us very uncomfortable. It makes me very uncomfortable. Because when I say, thou shalt not murder, how many in here go, got that one? Only six? I'm a little concerned. Wow, you better watch yourself as you're walking out. I kind of expected everybody to raise their hand. You know, it's like, hey, I got that, right? I got that one. And what do we do? Like when we're successful, what do we do? It's like, right on. Congratulations to me. I fulfilled the command. Thou shalt not murder. But did we? And so what I want you to understand and see is that when the commandments, particularly the Ten Commandments, were given, it was this life-altering message. Because I think it's hard for us to wrap our brain around this sometimes. It is for me. But prior to God giving the law to Moses, prior to that event, there's a lot of scripture before then, right? There's a lot of life that happens from the point in which Adam and Eve are kicked out of the garden to the point in which God gives the law to Moses. There's a lot of life that happens. And doesn't it make you a little nervous to think, what law were they following then, prior to Moses? It was just life was out of control. How out of control was it, Kevin? That's the question you guys would ask, right? If I gave you the microphone this morning, well, Crazy enough to where God flooded the whole earth in between the garden and the law, because people had forgotten who God was. And in the midst of this, there was no control. Can you imagine living in a society where there's no rules? And how difficult and scary that might be? And so I want you to hear that when this was given to Moses, and it was a way of life. All right, it's like, hey, this is a good way. You guys heard me say this a few weeks ago, that when the law was given, all 10 had to do with relationship. I think 6 of them are relationship with God, and 4 of them are relationship with each other. And that may be out of order. I apologize if I'm wrong on that. But bottom line, it had to do with living life together. And so I can imagine me thinking, hey, well, I hadn't murdered anybody. Check. Let's move on to the next one. And what Jesus is going to do here, and I want you to see this progression, because I think it's important for us to see this progression, because right before he gets to this, in Matthew chapter 5, verse 21, right before, he's talking about he came to fulfill the law. He came to bring it to fullness. What does that mean? It means to fulfill something means that I dug deep and I didn't just do the law, I found the heart of the law. And I culminated the heart of the law and I drew that out. And so this morning, here's the crazy thing. You guys have heard me say this 100 times over the last, I don't know, 6 years. When Jesus tells you something about himself, the reason I keep drilling this into your head is because I think it's probably the thing that anchors me the most in my life. Don't get me wrong. My life is not without struggle, all right? But it helps me the most. When Jesus reveals something about his nature to you, when Jesus shows himself to you, he's saying this should also be true of you. I'm not just showing you who I am so that you go, wow. I'm showing you who I am because I am calling you to be like me. If I'm going to show you something about my nature, it's not just to get an applause, a standing ovation. It's to get you to understand I am drawing you into this place. I am drawing you into this behavior. I am drawing you into this attitude. And so when Jesus says, prior to Matthew 5:21, I came to fulfill the law, what do you think Jesus wants us to do? Fulfill it. Right? I mean, didn't that make sense? And so in order for us to join arms and link arms with Jesus, he wants us to not just go, congratulations, you've not murdered anybody. He wants you to understand, why was that written? And what's the heart? What's the message? What was the intent behind the command, thou shalt not murder? So let's read that. Starting in Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. You have heard that it was said to those of old. And I know there's a lot of old people in here, but that's not talking about you. You shall not murder. And whoever murders will be liable to judgment. We understand that, don't we? We even operate under that in society, don't we? But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to counsel. And whoever says you fool will be liable to the hell of fire. Did he really say that? Did Jesus just say that? Because we can congratulate ourselves on the first one. But it's a slippery slope from there, isn't it? It's a very slippery slope. Let's continue reading this section. So if you are offering your gift at the altar And there, remember that your brother has something against you. Leave the gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. And so there's this progression, and I want you guys to see this progression because it's fascinating to me. In the beginning part of this section, it starts at murder. Everybody in here, would you say murder's the worst thing on that list? It kind of sounds bad, right? But then it goes to something else. It goes to anger. So we go from murder to anger, right? And then what's next? Insults, right? And we go to insults. And then we go to you fool. I want you to see the progression. In our terms, the progression would be less. It goes from greatest to least. That's the progression, if you will. It goes from murder to anger to insults to... So the Greek word is moro on this you fool, all right, which is where we get the term moron. There's a lot of chuckles on that one. I'm guessing some of y'all have called someone a moron before. I've called my children that. Do you guys follow me here a little bit? You see the progression. It's like from here, this heightened level, and then it goes to anger. And real quick, anger's like, are you sure anger's in the right spot? There's a hyperlink here that I think is important to note. Turn to Genesis chapter 4. Because when Jesus is talking about anger, this is the anger he's talking about. It's a malicious, vicious anger. Okay? Genesis chapter 4. Now, Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived, that's good that he knew her, and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And again she bore his brother Abel, and now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of fruit of the ground. And Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock, and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very, what's the word there? Angry. And his face fell. And the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. And its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it. Cain spoke to Abel, his brother, and when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. That's the kind of anger Jesus is talking about. It's a vicious, malicious anger. And so he goes from the old, the word to the old was don't murder. I say don't even be angry. What kind of, this kind of anger? Not only do I say this kind of anger, but I'm saying don't even offer insults. Because oftentimes the insults are perpetuate more. And matter of fact, I'm not going to stop there. I'm going to say if you're so loose with your tongue that you would call someone a moron, that's not right either. And if you go to the altar, this is his parable, if you will, in the midst of this. If you go to the altar to offer a sacrifice to God, but your brother has something against you, he's saying, don't bother leaving that sacrifice to me because things ain't right. Go get reconciled with your brother first. It brings me back, and you're going to hear this a lot as we go through the Sermon on the Mount. You're going to hear this a lot. It brings me back to when Jesus is approached and said, what is the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God. And who else are we supposed to love? Our neighbor. Our neighbor. Because in those two things, the law is fulfilled. How do you not murder? Because what is murder? I read, listened, watched all kinds of stuff this week. Some of the best stuff that I heard. Whew. When you murder someone, which you guys, at least seven of y'all said you've never done that. When you murder someone, you are making, I want you to hear the thread behind it. Okay? When you murder someone, you're making a public declaration that this person's existence has no value. I want you to hear that. If you murder someone, you're making a public declaration that this person's existence has no value, and you will take it upon yourself to sit in the seat of declaration. You're making a declaration that they have no value, which just in that little phrase, I want you to see, if you're making a declaration that someone has no value, what are you not doing? Loving. You are assessing value to someone. You are making the assessment that I see no value, and I'm going to make a declaration that no one sees value in this person to the point that they shouldn't even exist. Now, there are times in life that we don't even want to exist. And oftentimes it's because we don't genuinely feel love. And I just want you to see how these things go together. I mean, one of the greatest travesties in the society that we live in today is suicide. And it's perpetuated by the same thing. They feel no value. And as a result of not feeling value, they are making a declaration upon themselves that they don't need to exist. And it comes not from this end that it starts with, thou shalt not murder. It starts with you calling people a moron. Do you see how that grows and manifests itself? Now, interestingly enough, if you look back at Matthew chapter 5, you're going to see, I got to flip back over there. Sorry. I want you to see that as the sin seems to diminish from murder to anger to insults to just calling someone a moron, I want you to see as that kind of seems to diminish, I want you to see the consequences. Because the consequences are going the other direction. I say, everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to counsel. First you have judgment, and then you have counsel. I want you to think about it like this. In the Jewish sense, it would be you kind of call to the carpet a little bit, right? And you're liable for judgment, but then you might have to go to the Supreme Court. And in the Jewish world, that would be the Sanhedrin. And so the elevation of consequences is rising. And you're going to have to go to the Sanhedrin if you're throwing insults at people. If you say you're a fool, you're liable to what? Hell. Do you see how what we view as a diminishing list, the consequences are in reverse? You see it kind of start out softly, and then it gets a little more intense, and then it gets to the ultimate end goal, which is hell. And so we have to ask ourselves, why in the world is Jesus putting a higher consequence against something that we don't see as a big consequence? And it's because the heart. I want you to understand that Cain killed his brother, but there was a problem before that. You see what kind of instigated it? It was, what instigated it was an offering, wasn't it? An offering that he and his brother both gave. One was acceptable, one wasn't. Went to anger. Right? And ultimately led to what? Murder. So many times in our life, we've learned how to control behavior, haven't we? Everybody in here knows it's wrong to murder. So we learn how to modify our behavior, don't we? How many, Hunter talked this morning very, very well about loopholes. If you were in class, you heard him talk about loopholes. If you're looking for a loophole, you're already wrong. Because you're trying to justify yourself. You're trying to say, I've committed this act, but I need to find a reason to say it's okay. That's a loophole. Who in here likes loopholes? Be honest. We oftentimes are seeking out loopholes, aren't we? And so what I want you to see is we have found a loophole by saying, okay, I won't murder. I'm going to control my behavior. But what's going on in here is detrimental. What's going on in here is terrible. What's going on in here isn't right. Because what I'm doing in here, and sometimes even acting out, maybe I'm insulting someone. Maybe I've said things to someone out of my frustration. And I've aimed my frustration at them. And what I've done is I've insulted them to the point where I say, you have no value. I'm devaluing you. Or maybe I'm just flippant with it. And I'm like, ah, you're just being a moron. We do that, right? And how about this? Y'all okay with that? Not sure, huh? Because we can laugh it off. We can go, whoop, I'm sorry, grace. And we just shrug that off in the midst of saying, I will determine your value. I am going to decide how much or how little value you have. I'm here to tell you, I've lived a large portion of my life to find value from other people. Anybody else like that? Anybody else become what you think somebody else wants so that you can find value in their eyes? Anybody do that? Or is that just me? So oftentimes in our lives, We're seeking validation, we're seeking value, but we're seeking it from each other. And that morphs us, and then when someone insults us, or somebody calls us a ding-dong, or whatever the case may be, it hurts to the core, because so many times in life, we are seeking the value of one another. And I'm here to tell you right now, what Jesus is calling his people, his 12, right now, into this moment, is he's saying, listen, I need you to value everyone. Does that mean I got to value a Democrat? Yeah? It does. Does that mean I need to value someone who, man, I just don't care for very much? Yeah? It does. Why? Because Jesus wants us to understand that the heart of thou shalt not murder is that it is God's job and God's job alone to dictate value. And his value system on mankind is that he created mankind in his image. Let that resonate. God created us in his image. Who am I to devalue that? Who am I to sit in the seat of determining the value or lack of value any person has? At the root, it's not about murder at all. or anger. It's about how I view people as having worth and dignity. Let me say that again. At the root, it's not about murder. It's not about anger. It's about how I view people as having worth and dignity. To love your neighbor is to value their existence. To love your neighbor is to value their existence as precious before God, and therefore precious to you, because they are an image of the Almighty God. I've heard this text so many ways. This kind of loops in with Jesus coming down and cleansing the temple and us trying to find the loophole. Maybe my anger is righteous, like Jesus' anger when he turned over the money changers' tables. Maybe I'm justified in my anger. Jesus is calling his 12 to be different. He's saying, listen, I am here to fulfill not just the edges of the law, but the heart that went behind it. I'm here to fulfill God's intent of giving it to mankind. That's why I'm here. And the crazy thing is, Jesus doesn't say, so let me do it and then you guys can all tap into me and you don't have to. That's what we like, right? Let's be honest. We like going, hey, thank you, Jesus. Now I don't have to. That sounds a lot like a loophole, doesn't it? No. I want you to hear what Jesus is calling his 12 into. He's saying, fulfill it with me. This is the kind of life I'm calling you to. I'm calling you into a place where you see value in people. What kind of people? All kinds of people. People that share your heart, people who don't share your heart, people who wish harm against you, people who wish the best for you. I want you to see value in my people because they were made in my image. I'm here to tell you right now, people don't have to agree with your theology to appreciate who you have been called to be. Let me say that again. People do not have to agree with your theology to appreciate and value who you are being. And whether they agree with my theology or don't agree with my theology shouldn't change how I treat them. Do I need to say that again, or did y'all get it? Because Jesus has called me not just to not murder or to fling insults or to be flippant with my words towards people to devalue them. He has called me to see the value in people as God has sees the value in people. God sees a lot of broken people in life, doesn't he? But he also sees people that are worth it. Romans says Jesus came and died for the wicked while they were still wicked. That applies to everyone you don't like also. We have a joke in our house. Also too as well, he died for them while they were wicked. Why are we putting ourselves in a place of determining a person's value? It's because society has taught us that. But what Jesus teaches is that we need to look at mankind through the same eyes that Jesus' Father looks at mankind, which is, I created these people in my image, and I will love them. This isn't a call not to murder. It's a call to love. I'm here to tell you this morning. Whew. Man, this one's been convicting to me. I think sometimes y'all think I stand up here and try to tell you guys how to live. It's quite the opposite. Sometimes I give sermons that are really intended for the audience of one. Me. It's not about murder. It's about love. It's about value. And seeing the value in people. This morning, you guys get a break from me, which y'all may appreciate. Lana and I are going on a trip, and we are super looking forward to it because it has nothing to do with work. As Hunter has told me, all your vacations have to do with some semblance of work. This one does not, and we are excited about that. We will not be here for the next two Sundays. However, I will tell you, Hunter's going to continue in this line over the next two Sundays, and it will be worth being here. From what I hear, he's better than me. So, I don't know, take that how you will. That's just what I hear. I think Monty's the one that tells me that most. But, hey, God's calling us to be different. Y'all see that? And he's calling this church in this sermon in 2025. To be different. Man, that should excite us, shouldn't it? That should excite us to want to be a part of that. To want to be a part of the kingdom. What kingdom? His kingdom. And this is what life looks like in His kingdom. Where you value people inside it and out of it. Where you love people. Why? Because they're made in His image. If no other reason, that right there. And let's start working on this. Let's listen to the parable. If you got a grievance with someone, hear me now. If you got a grievance with someone, what Jesus is trying to tell you here is you better go get that resolved. Because that's hindering what you claim to be offering to God. Love well. Love humbly. Because Jesus lived that way. And He's calling us to live that way. This morning I want to challenge y'all with this message. I know it's challenged me. If there's anything we can do for you, I'd ask that you come as Hunter leads us in an invitation song.